It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right. Hello, everyone. Good day. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in to the Second Amendment radio show, 2A Radio. I want to start the show by giving you some needed information here for all of my listeners and the rest of America as well. And that is this. Online privacy essentially does not exist. I want to start off with the first thing. This is an alert dealing with Facebook, and I'm going to read this to you, and then you can go, if you're a member of Facebook, and go onto Facebook, go to the Bill Carnes 2A Radio fan page, and this is posted there. It says, as of today, and this is actually a couple days ago now, new privacy setting called instant personalization on Facebook that shares data with non-Facebook websites and is automatically set to enable. Which means your information on Facebook is being shared by Facebook with non-Facebook organizations. And that is entirely up to Facebook who they choose to show it to, who they share all this information with. And online it gives information on my page, it gives information on how to uncheck enable. It is a long, drawn-out process. Follow it step by step and you can do this. By the way, if your friends are on Facebook as well, have them do it. If not, they'll be sharing information about you, anything that you happen to have back and forth. So go on to Facebook, go to the Bill Carnes 2A Radio fan page, click the like button, and read this information. Follow along and uncheck all of that garbage. Another very important privacy-related matter to do is go to a website called Spokio.com, S-P-O-K-E-O.com, S-P-O-K-E-O.com. You can type in anybody's name on that thing. Type in your name, and it'll let you know how many people with that name are in each state. Click on your state and find you. It's going to go into your address, where you live. And then there's going to be all sorts of wonderful information, which is free to know. But if you pay them their ransom of, I think it's $2.95 a month, payable up front, $35 a year, you can have all the information on everybody that you want, including, and this is free. The free part of Spokio gives an idea of how much, first of all, your address, where you live, whether or not you're involved in a relationship, if you own a home, what your income is, generally speaking, all of this stuff. You pay the money, it gives email addresses, specific workplaces, other acquaintances, your physical address, other known addresses, all sorts of information on you. And you haven't authorized any of this. So go to Spokio, S-P-O-K-E-O.com. Search yourself out. And when you get there, you're going to find your page. Find the page that has to deal with you if you're on there. Most people are. Almost everybody I searched that was a close friend or family member that I found on there, all but one was actually on there. All but one. Very surprising to me. What you do is you go to the top where the website is, the URL, if you will, and you'll copy that. Once that's copied, you go down to the very bottom of your page on Spokio. Very small letters in the very bottom all the way on the right. And there's all these little small words. One of them right towards the center says privacy. Find that. It's in gray type. It's hard to see. It's very small, all the way at the bottom, all the way on the right, with a few other things. Click on privacy. When you click on that, you will see where you can go in there to remove yourself. It includes putting in your email address. You need to put in a good working email address. Put in your email address. Click on the submit button or whatever it says. Then when you get the email within the next minute or so in your inbox, you need to open that up, click on it, and then it finally removes you from the Spokio database. Finally removes you. They already have your email address, so it's no big deal to give it to them again. They already have it. It's already available to find. So don't be afraid of giving them an email address, something, some information they already have. This will get you off the list. If you have more than one listing for yourself, I had two or three different addresses, different places I've lived. You can only use that email address twice. So if you have more than one listing, if you have two listings, you can use the same email address. If you have three or more listings, for every two listings that they have of you, say if you've moved around the country, you need a different email address for each one. So therefore, you probably want to go to a free email service like Hotmail or Yahoo or Gmail or something like that and start setting up a few different email accounts just to get removed off of Spokio. Let all of your friends, all of your neighbors, all of your family know about this and remove this information. I don't know who Spokio is. I don't know where they garnished all of the information, but I know they have it. I know it's free to get some of it, and for $35 you can get all of it. Where do you think these background type investigator sorts of guys are coming from? Where do you think these people that want to know all about you for identity theft or to stalk you for one reason or another? You could probably look up all sorts of celebrities and find them. I actually have an application that anytime my name comes up on the internet, I get an alert. I know where it is. Spokio was absolutely under the radar. Totally under the radar. Spokeo.com. Go on there, go through the process, find your page, click privacy in the small little gray hard to see letters all the way in the bottom, all the way on the right. Copy, you know, your URL and give them your email address and go there and click on and get everything done. Remove yourself. And in addition, make sure that you go to my fan page on Facebook, Bill Carnes, C-A-R-N-S, there's no E in the last name, or 2A Radio, you can search either of those. Click the like, read the thing, go through the process, and get rid of the automatic, open, no longer private information about you on Facebook, and eliminate that so they are not allowed to share your information. Because it defaults to, yeah, sure, do whatever you want with my information. Stay tuned, guys. There's plenty more to come in today's show. And I'll be back right after these words. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're tuned in live right here to 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. I'm going to talk with you a little bit more about 1911. So we closed the show yesterday talking about carry guns, and I talked about how I carry 1911, responding to a listener email about, you know, what do I carry, what would I carry, things such as that. So I'm going to give you the opposite end of this discussion. And this is a post that came up on December 23rd by somebody without a name. They call themselves Yankee Gun Nuts. And the title of the article is, "The 1911 Sucks." So listen to this. He says, "I've said it before, and I will end up saying it again. The 1911, an old design that is more trouble than it's worth. I don't say it to be confrontational or to draw attention to myself. I say it because I see my fellow shooters mindlessly parroting the gun equivalent of Chuck Norris facts whenever the 1911 comes up in conversation, and I just don't get it. I'm not surprised that the 1911 is out of place in today's world, and you shouldn't be surprised either. What other 100-year-old design is still in use today? It's the comment, in the comment section of another blog, I summarize my skepticism of the 1911 attributes thusly. It's a 100-year-old design. It needs tools to disassemble. It has unreliable magazines. It's finicky about ammo. And as a single-action pistol, it's unsafe for 95% of the users to carry. Now, I'm going to pause in this story for just a moment to begin my retort to this. First of all, the 1911 is far from being out of place in today's world. And when he says you shouldn't be surprised about that either, I direct the question to, if it's out of place, then why do so many people carry it? It's obviously in place as a factual matter. It's in place. It's in place in my holster. It's in place in the holster of Dave Champion. It's in the place of holsters of all sorts of other professional firearms instructors that I know. And I don't know the industry average firearms instructor. The industry average firearms instructor is somebody that's a cop that now works out at the range part-time, or, you know, somebody in the military that teaches to basic training. Somebody that is an NRA certified instructor, which quite honestly doesn't mean very much. The NRA certification to become a firearms instructor is an incredibly low standard. The NRA just doesn't even, they're not even aware enough to really know this. But it's an NRA certified instructor that now teaches CCW in his local community. That's the industry standard of firearms instructors. And I have to tell you, unfortunately, it's embarrassingly low, just the way it is. The higher end instructors that I know, the 1911 is what they carry. And when he says for the 95% of it's, and as single action pistol goes, it's unsafe for 95% of its users to carry. Well, I would venture to say, in a matter of speaking, you're right, because 95% of the people who carry a gun on a daily living have really no idea what they're doing. Therefore, it's not just for the 1911. 95% of the people that carry Glocks every day, that gun is unsafe for them to have. 95% of the people that carry a revolver, that gun is safe for them to unhave, to have, and so on and so forth. And it's not the tool. It's not the gun, the tool. It's the tool that's carrying it. It's the person that's carrying the gun that doesn't know how to operate the tool properly. Because unfortunately, the level of firearms instruction in this country is unreasonably pathetic. It is horribly pathetic. On top of that, there's really three things that you'll almost never teach any man how to do. Because men are born into knowing these three things. They know about cars, they know about women, and they know about guns. And that's just genetically enhanced in their being. You're not going to teach about any of it. So, it's difficult to teach anybody about any of those unless they're wanting to learn. And having a gun, to some, is just a big macho thing. So, I don't need to learn about this. I got a gun. I'm macho now. So, continuing on with this guy's story. He says, in my original complaint, I forgot to mention the issue with the slide stop failures and the whole internal extractor external extractor situation, either of which would be serious enough to kill any other design's reputation in the shooting world. Now, being a 1911 aficionado, being a 1911 qualified and certified armor, I can tell you, I don't know what the hell this guy's talking about. You can either have the gun with an internal extractor or an external extractor. No big deal. People talk about having to, quote unquote, tune an extractor to a 1911. Guys, that happens at the factory. And it's more tuning the gun to be able to handle whatever extractor you stick in there. But I've never had an extraction problem in my gun. I've probably got 55 to 60,000 rounds through my 1911. I don't have extraction issues. And you know something? It is the same extractor. I've never fired a round with a different extractor in this gun. until it fails, I won't change it either. The whole issue about needing tools to disassemble the gun, okay, not really to field strip it. Maybe a bushing wrench. I don't even use a bushing wrench. To completely disassemble it, there's no gun out there that you don't need a tool for. You need at least one tool to disassemble every single gun completely. So that's an empty argument. And the dealing with this extractor situation, that would be serious enough to kill any other design or reputation in the shooting world. Well, it hasn't in 100 years, so therefore your argument is empty. Okay, continuing on. In response to some knee-jerk defenses of the 1911 from fanboys who drank too much of John M. Browning's Kool-Aid, and, I'm sorry, who told me, who drank too much Kool-Aid, who told me how all I needed to do was buy a bunch of aftermarket parts and send the gun to a gunsmith, I added the following. Why does a reliable 1911 cost so much and need so much gunsmithing? Guys, that is an argument of well over 10 to 15 years ago. And at the time, it was a reasonable argument. It's not now. Unless you buy a complete stock original design 1911 or 1911 A1, which I don't even know if you can find on the market anymore, this is a completely empty shrill of an argument. And for this guy to say it's some sort of knee-jerk defense, what he's got is some old-school argument that's more than a decade old. He continues by saying, to be fair, I have some of the same complaints with the Walther PPK, which is also a very old design, which has been eclipsed by more modern designs, which can do everything it does better. Okay, you're going to need to expound on that on another tyrant-laden article that doesn't actually have your actual name. He says, I mean, it's unreasonable to expect an affordably priced pistol for defense to reliably feed hollow points out of the box. He forms that as a question. Is it? What Smith & Wesson pistol of recent manufacture won't feed hollow points? What about Glock, Sig, Beretta? I know cars need some rounds through them before they're reliable, but it says right in the owner's manual. I have to ask you this, because you actually preface it by saying, what modern gun needs this? What modern gun? What modern designs? Well, I have to tell you, you will be hard-pressed to find a modern 1911 that has trouble feeding any ammunition. So you're using old arguments. This thing should have been published in, you know, some opinion paper about 15 years ago. There's certainly plenty more. The shooting public would not accept an unreliable gun of a more modern design. But for some reason, the 1911 gets a pass for all of its flaws. Just use hardball is not a valid defense of the 1911 design, nor is it a valid strategy for selecting ammunition to defend yourself. Well, I'll certainly retort to that when we return from this upcoming break. So stay tuned. This is Bill Carnes, right here, live on 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back. We're in the midst of reading this posted letter by an unnamed person that just has an online handle bashing the 1911. So, again, most recently, we're going to back up just a little bit. It says, the shooting public would not accept an unreliable gun of a more modern design than the 1911, but for some reason, the 1911 gets a pass for all of its flaws. Just use hardball is not a valid defense of the 1911, nor is it a valid strategy for selecting ammunition to defend yourself. Well, let's address that. First of all, Porsche has been around for many years. But if you have a Porsche, you pretty much need to be a better driver than most. You just don't want to throw somebody that knows very little about a Porsche into a Porsche and let them drive it. They're probably not going to get it done very well. A 1911 is not a beginner's gun. that's something you have to have some intellect about, and you have to have some ability with. If you don't have much intellect, stick with a simpler design. I'm wondering if the author of this 1911 bashing is minus a little bit of gun intellect. I don't know. I don't know who it is. There's no name attached to it. And just use hardball is not a valid defense of the 1911 design. It's not. He says, nor is it a valid strategy for selecting ammunition to defend yourself. It's not a valid defense. But again, we're talking that this is an argument against the 1911 that's mid-1990s. Now, when it talks about a valid strategy for selecting ammunition to defend yourself, I regurgitate a story I've said on the air a few times. And that is this. Back in about 1995, I think it was, back during my police era, I spent a day at the Clark County Coroner's Office. During that day, I spoke to the chief pathologist who'd worked there for 26 years, over a quarter century. And I asked him, of all the people that have come through here, you've seen different bullets of design and caliber and everything, what is the one round that actually is most effective? And he said, without a doubt, 230 grain hardball from a .45 ACP does more consistent damage than any other handgun round out there, period. Nothing else is nearly as consistent or nearly as predictable. And at that point in time, he told me he carried a Colt Commander Series 70 with 230 grain ball ammo. This is a man that had been working for over a quarter century digging bullets out of people's bodies. Now, that is a valid strategy for selecting ammunition to defend yourself. Continuing on with this rant, and God help anyone who buys a used 1911. Everyone and their brother seems to think that they are qualified to take a Dremel to their 1911. Guys who can't change their own flat tire somehow have no reservations about playing doctor on their 1911s. Who knows what wacky custom parts they put into their gun because someone read about it on the interweb tubes. Well, I have to agree with him there. Way too many people tinker around with their guns when they're not qualified and they shouldn't be. So we're totally on par with that one. He says, it was the best military sidearm, pardon me, of its day. And for a long time afterwards, he says, I did not dispute that, but its time has long passed. And a military sidearm is not the same thing as a handgun for personal defense. Really? I would think that a handgun for personal defense needs to be even better than a military sidearm, because that's a backup. For us, it's a primary on the street. And is this saying somehow that the Beretta at any point in time has been a good modern choice to replace the 1911? The answer is no. On top of that, many police and military have backed up, gotten rid of Berettas, and gone back to the 1911 because of its superior qualifications, design, use, grip angle, reliability, and caliber. He says, leave aside the lack of reliability with hollow points and other problems. Okay, what other problems? You didn't name them. You're just laying it out there. And lack of reliability with hollow points of old guns that have not been around a gunsmith? I'm sure most of them have. He says, the 1911 is too big to conceal. And the smaller versions are less reliable due to their shorter slide travel and tendency to limp wrist the gun. All of this is BS. Total. Complete BS. The 1911 is not too big to conceal. It's very flat. I conceal one on a regular basis. I'm 6 foot tall. I'm a little over 200 pounds. Okay. I could be a lot smaller and conceal it. I know a woman who is 5 foot three that carries a full size 1911 concealed on a regular basis. And here's the other thing. It's not length of slide that makes concealability. It is thickness, which the 1911 has it on most guns because it is thin. And height, actually, if you're looking at the gun in a normal shooting platform, height from the back, from the rear sight all the way to the bottom of the back strap at the bottom of the magazine well. That is the other concealability, because if you're carrying it that on your firing side, hip, under a jacket, under a shirt, whatever, that could go from front to back, and we're a little wider than we are thick. So this goes on the thickness side of the human being. In that case, you go with something like an officer's model. And something about Smaller versions are less reliable due to the shorter slide travel and a tendency to limp wrist the gun. The 1911 is a full steel gun, full metal. Limp wristing is not an issue I've ever come across when it comes to people shooting the 1911, and I've been across thousands of them, having trained tens of thousands of people personally over my career so far. And the shorter slide travel is total BS, because slide travel is based on the length of the cartridge. And a .45 ACP doesn't change in size. The round doesn't change in size based on the size of the gun. Completely empty argument and totally bogus statement. He continues by saying, some people protest by saying the 1911 is the best gun for defense because the most realistic shooting sports are heavily populated with 1911 shooters. He says, everyone knows that you should train like you fight so that you will fight like you train, right? Well, that would be a bit more convincing argument if those realistic shooting sports didn't have intricate rules that somehow disqualify most non-1911 designs. Purely by coincidence, right? Sure, they come up with the semi-plausible rationales for some of those rules, but there is no way to disguise the overall bias towards the 1911. Now, I have to tell you something. There are all sorts of shooting events and shooting groups out there, and just about every single one of them has different classifications. And if you have a single stacked, single action group, that's just for the 1911. They also have a double stacked, double action, or single action group that goes to other types of designs of guns. Another completely empty argument. He says, I don't hate 1911 fans. I merely pity them because they are victims of marketing hype and groupthink. The lemmings of the gun world. And if someone sinks thousands of dollars into a 1911 and isn't using it to compete for money, well, then they are just gullible. Like the kind of people who pay for for tap water in a bottle. Really. Something tells me my experience with handguns in general is far, far more and far superior to this author of this letter. This unnamed goof. And you mean to tell me that you pity me because of my experience with my 1911s? And I'm some victim of groupthink or lemmings of the gun world? I challenge you to call into this show and for us to debate this on the air. Whoever you are. Again, you go by the handle of, Yankee Gun Nuts. Okay. Who is the author of this? Who is the person who wrote this? I'm going to do research during the break and see if I can really get behind and find out who wrote this. I'll let you know after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-way radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on! I know.
All right, guys, continuing on with this story, this post, should I say. By the way, I found out that the author is somebody that goes by the handle of Gun Nut Megger, M-E-G-G-E-R, on the YankeeGunNuts.com website. So during the break, I found that out, and I actually posted the following. I disagree with the author in several areas and agree on only a couple. Being a professional firearms trainer and a nationally syndicated radio host, I'd like to invite the author to an on-air interview. Bill at 2aradio.com. Happy New Year to everyone. Bill Carnes. And I put the website, 2aradio.com. So we'll see if we get a response to that. Continuing on with his letter here, it says, so what if Jeff Cooper liked the only handgun in use when he was in the military? It's not like he had a choice of other handguns to use. And on a related note, Jeff Cooper has a reputation that exceeds his accomplishments. The best information that I can find shows that he spent the Battle of Guadalcanal as the training officer on General Vandergrift's staff, not leading a platoon, not on the line, pulling a trigger, and his coy evasions when asked about a real-world experience with gunfights are revealing if one cares to view them objectively. Now, I need to address this. Jeff Cooper never professed to have ever shot for blood. As a matter of fact, I can find his writings, and I've read everything Jeff Cooper's ever written for the most part. And he has said on many occasions he has never shot for blood and never was in an active gunfight on the battlefield in the military. He was a colonel. Of course, moving up the ranks, he would have had more opportunity for that. Jeff Cooper easily and in many times in written words and verbally admits that he was never in a gunfight. That's okay. He still ended up being the trainer of an entire generation because he knows what it takes. He trained a lot of people who were in the gunfights, and he admits that. So to say that Jeff Cooper, for some reason, was trying to put himself out there as something other than he was is a total fabrication and misinterpretation and just basically an outright lie. Other people might think that Jeff Cooper has some sort of time behind the trigger and shooting for blood, but Jeff Cooper never said that himself. In fact, he said the opposite. Continuing, he says, if you have documentation on Cooper's real-world experience, please drop me a line. I'm happy to revise my opinion. I have no doubt he was qualified to teach people how to shoot on a range. Beyond that, a grain of salt is required. I prefer to get my advice on defense and gunfighting from men who have actually been there and done that. Mossad Ayoub, Jim Carrillo, etc. Am I a qualification snob? No, I am a results snob. Okay, I've got it out of my system. And that's the end of his post. Interesting. Well, of course, I went through everything on that. And I really think that this guy's off target to, I guess, throw a pun in there. Off target to the point where I felt it necessary to read this. I actually originally saw this thing about 10 days ago. And wasn't sure if I was going to read it on the air or not. But because we've been talking about 1911s the last couple of days, I figured we should go ahead and throw it in there. Which brings me to the next. I did have a couple of listener emails asking me a little bit more information on the Dave Champion Malone LeVay 1911. So I actually went to Dave and I asked him, I said, can you give me a list of all the attributes? I'll talk about this on the air. He said, sure. This comes directly off of the Ed Brown website. You can go to edbrown.com/champion.htm. All of those names in there are common spelling. Ed Brown Champion. edbrown.com/champion.htm. The Champion Malone LeVay 1911 has it's a classic 1911 design. The standard model is a 5-inch government model. There's also now the 4.25-inch commander model. Let's see, hand fit and assembled by master pistol smiths, front and rear cocking serrations. The famous Greek phrase Malone LeVay in Greek letters, laser engraved on the left side, translated to come and take them, is the classical expression of defiance, blah, blah, blah. Champion laser engraved on the side. Let's see, the famous Spartan battle helmet is engraved on the custom G10 grip. Ed Brown's custom snakeskin treatment on the front strap and mainspring housing for both comfort and rock-solid grip in any situation without chewing up your hand in long hours and days of training. And I have to tell you, that snakeskin treatment is basically a refined version of stippling or kind of a scallop system on the front and back strap, and it's really nice. Tritium front night sights, having tritium only in the front sight allows for faster, more reflective close quarters response in low light situations. Okay. Wide 1.56 notch plain black rear sight by 10.8 performance. The wide notch provides faster front sight acquisition at typical handgun fighting distances. It's also great for older shooters who have eyes who may not be quite as sharp as they once were. The rear of the sight is serrated to prevent glare across the back of the rear sight. There's a solid aluminum trigger. Slide stop is serrated on the bottom, which matches serrations on the top of the slide stop. That makes it easier to lock the slide back if you need to in some sort of a clearance situation. I actually have stippling on the bottom of one of my slide stops and serrations on the bottom of the other one for exactly the same reason. Ed Brown's famous high-rise beaver tail grip safety with memory grooves. Not sure what a memory groove is, but they have it. Ed Brown's Maxiwell magazine funnel for rapid magazine changes because pistol fighting distances, time matters. Let's see, single side thumb safety is standard. Ambi safety is optional, so you can shoot effectively with either hand. Now, I know that Dave, who designed this gun, is a huge fan of the ambi safety. I am not. I don't like ambi safeties on my guns, but Dave won't have a 1911 without it. It is totally personal preference. And a lot of people look at it for being able to shoot with your support hand. If I have to end up going to my support hand, that safety is going to find a way off. I've trained with it, and if I have to use my index finger, it's not the best way to do it. Otherwise, it makes it a little bit wider out there, and I don't really like the way it feels on my, when the ambi safety is on the, like, for me, it'd be the right side of the gun. Being a right-handed shooter, the safety should be on the left. If you have one also on the right, it tends to hit the top back edge of my trigger finger, and I don't really care for that. It's just a personal preference. Pistol is finished with Ed Brown's high-impact quality black Gen 3 coating for appearance and wear resistance. And I have to tell you, it's beautiful. The standard size gun is $2,495. And then the Commander also has the Ed Brown bobbed frame. It has no mag funnel, and it has carry cuts if you want to have them, which are on the forward part of the slide for chamber checking sort of thing. And you can have that as well. And the Commander edition of this gun is, I think, like $2,950 or something. It's just under $3,000. It's about an extra $500. Expensive guns, yes, but I gotta tell you, they're really nice. I have, finger fiddled around with the Malone LeVay 1911s that, Dave has, and they're really great guns. Really great guns. I just don't have that kind of money to put into a gun right now. I have basically, I think, all but one handgun that I really want to have right now. Having another 1911 right now is just not in the cards for me. Otherwise, if I did, I would seriously look into this Malone LeVay. And I'm not trying to pimp this for Dave. I don't get anything out of this. I don't know that Dave gets anything out of this. It's just an excellent designed fighting tool. And Dave was in the second bat of the Army Rangers back in the 80s. So he has some experience. He knows what he's talking about. He's been carrying 1911s for years. He knows what needs to go into a good gun. Pardon me. So with all that being said, it's all good. Now, I want to give you, just quickly, while we have a short bit left, and I might hit this a little bit more probably next week, about these eligibility challenges that are dealing with Obama's eligibility to be in the office. Well, there is one that's reached the Supreme Court, and the person challenging Barack Obama's eligibility to occupy the White House has been docketed for consideration before the Supreme Court, and the plaintiff this time formally is asking that the justices appointed by Obama, the respondent in this case, that they be excluded. That means that Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan would not be allowed to hear this case because they are appointees of the very person whose eligibility is being challenged. And here's a quote from it. It says, "There's a widespread perception amongst conservative media figures such as Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin that judicial appointments have been made by the respondent Obama with the exception of favors in return. Expectation of favors in return. This is combined with a campaign of ridicule and unthinkability on these serious issues led by the press spokesman of the respondent Obama, amongst others," said in a motion to rescue. Interesting stuff. Guys, thanks for tuning in today. You definitely want to be here tomorrow when we launch a brand new interesting line of ammo.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.